Meditation is a practice of concentrated focus. There are different ways to do it, and we're learning that the benefits may go far beyond increased awareness and reduced stress. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore meditation with practitioners from around the state. I'll talk with Dr. Luke Hansen of Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids about how meditation can be used in conjunction with medical treatments. I'll talk with Charlie Day, founder of the Des Moines Meditation and Mindfulness Group, a teacher and a student from the Maharishi School in Fairfield, and a student of the Lam Rim Kadampa Buddhist Center in Iowa City. Join our conversation after the news. This is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to explore the practice of meditation. There are many different ways to meditate and many different reasons to do it. Today, we'll talk about some of the different approaches to meditation and what we're learning about its benefits. Later this hour, I'll talk with Charlie Day, who is founder of the Des Moines Meditation and Mindfulness Group, a teacher and a student from the Maharishi School in Fairfield, and a student of the Lam Rim Kadampa Buddhist Center in Iowa City. My first guest today is Dr. Luke Hansen. He's a pain psychologist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. And we're going to talk about how meditation can be used in conjunction with medical treatments. We'd also like to hear from you. Do you meditate? Why do you do it? Has it changed your life? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dr. Hansen, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
And you work with patients who have a lot of different kinds of problems. Can you tell me, take me back a few years to when you first started integrating meditation and relaxation techniques into your work?
Sure. Well, techniques, meditation or other mind-body techniques have been around for quite a while, and I've used them probably ever since starting to practice with individuals with anxiety or mental health issues, depression. These techniques can help to help people initiate the relaxation response that helps counteract the chronic stress response that our body experiences when under enough stress for a long enough period of time. And then more recently, in the last year and a half or so since moving to Mercy in Cedar Rapids, using these techniques more frequently with individuals with chronic pain or chronic health conditions.
We're focusing this hour on meditation, but there are a number of different ways that you can help someone relax and cope with stress. But when someone comes to you, if they're dealing with chronic pain or with an illness, and you need to help them learn how to relax, how do you approach that?
Well, I think the first thing that I like to assess for is whether or not the person has an awareness of the impact that stress or their efforts to cope or not cope with stress are playing in their management of their health or their recovery. Because, a lot of these individuals are in such emotional or physical pain that they just want to get rid of it, rightfully so. I think we all would. But, are a lot of times, in the case of the patients I work with, are focused on, a procedure or a medication that certainly not knocking those interventions at all, but they want to get rid of it rather than addressing everything that their health issue represents. It's not just in the case of pain, that physical experience. Obviously, if we get rid of that, things would be a lot easier, but it becomes much more than that. It becomes an emotional experience, suffering for a lot of people. It becomes a social experience, of We may not be as active with others and isolating. It can become a cognitive experience where it's harder to focus and pay attention, either because of the health issues, the pain distracting us, or the medications we're on that can sometimes interfere with concentration. And it can become a spiritual issue for people. You know, I have people that say, you know, I have more than I can handle. You know, why me? Why is this happening? So just first and foremost, helping them recognize everything else other than just that physical aspect, and then the importance of addressing that and how not addressing that can exacerbate their issues.
So do you meet with resistance sometimes when people say, I don't want this, I want help, I don't want to be taught a technique?
I think certainly I do. You know, I think so. You have to be tactful. You have to introduce it. You have to really, I feel like it's important for me to really explain why these interventions work, why they're important, the research behind it. I think I have a lot of patients come in that feel like, for lack of a better word, that meditation or these techniques are too new agey for them, or that when they think of meditation, you have to be sitting in a robe, pretzel-legged in front of a candle, and that's the only way you can do it. That they, you know, again, how is that going to make an impact for me? I need to get rid of this pain. And I also try to clarify expectations that while these approaches make a huge difference for people, you know, certainly it will feel at times like they're trying to put out a forest fire with a squirt gun. You know, that the pain or the anxiety that they're feeling is so intense that to sit and try some of these techniques is very difficult, but to help them understand that it's a process that they'll learn over time and get better at, like anything else.
So what are some of the things that you tell your patients about how damaging anxiety and these amounts of stress can be? What does that do to our bodies?
Well, as mentioned earlier, basically any time, a natural response of our body, whether we like it or not, over time that we experience is called we refer to it as a chronic stress response, that if under enough stress, or again, because stress is kind of a fact of life, we all experience stress, sometimes it's more how we're coping with stress, that if enough stress accumulates or we're not coping with it well, this activates this chronic stress response, which is associated with basically kind of the fraying of our nervous system, where we're more susceptible to a variety of illness, whether that be depression and anxiety or gastrointestinal issues, sleep difficulties, appetite disturbance, fatigue. All of these things start to occur as we are exposed to prolonged stress, and if we're not coping with it adequately. That's why these techniques like meditation are important, because they can help to evoke what we refer to as the relaxation response, which serves to kind of counteract or balance this chronic stress response, and ideally begin to make our nervous system less reactive to some of this chronic stress or chronic pain, or when it is activated, it helps it to return to homeostasis a little more easily.
You work with cancer patients and helping them deal with the stress of going through treatment, but there have also been studies that show that meditating or engaging in other relaxation techniques can actually help boost the body's ability to fight cancer. How does that work?
Well, you're exactly right. Meditation techniques, visual imagery, read stories or studies about visualizing cancer cells being destroyed, One woman spoke about imagining the character from the movie Kill Bill inside of her destroying cancer cells. And really, the mind is, you ask how it works, the mind is just very powerful. We don't have too much trouble believing that it can make us miserable, but it's harder for us for some reason sometimes to have faith in that when we focus on being well or taking care of ourselves, that can make a difference. It's really, the power of the mind at work, whether you want to refer to that as placebo or whatever the case may be, it works and it makes a big difference for people.
Before we run out of time to talk about this, let's talk about different techniques that you use. Once you have convinced your patient that, okay, this is something we're going to try. I need you to be on board. These are the reasons why this might be beneficial to you. How do you teach someone to meditate?
Well, there are a variety of approaches. You know, the first thing that I help them to understand is that all of these approaches, whether it's meditation or other mind-body techniques, have two things in common. First is that it usually involves some type of repetition. There's something soothing about repetition. When we're infants, we're rocked. When I was a child, if I fell off my bike, mom would say, count to 10 or take some deep breaths before we named all these different relaxation strategies. We knew that this repetition was helpful. The other thing that's very important, and this is much easier said than done, is to take a passive approach to the thoughts that come through your mind, because as you are engaging in these activities, it's inevitable that you will have some degree of mind chatter, that as you are repeating a soothing phrase or sound or mantra to yourself, that out of nowhere there may be the thought of, I forgot to pay this bill, or, oh gosh, there's a shooting pain, or this isn't working, that Dr. Hansen's full of it. Whatever the case may be, it's important to understand that that's going to occur and to gently guide yourself back to the phrase, the sound, the mantra that you've chosen for yourself, or I help people choose something that works for them. It can be a variety of things. There's not necessarily a right or wrong as far as what device a person uses in their mind to help them stay focused.
But the idea, I think a lot of us, when we think about meditation, we think we have to wipe the mind blank. But that's unrealistic, is what you're saying.
I think it to perfectly wipe it blank for extended periods of time, I think, is not fair. I think probably, and you'll have some people in here, would say that even masters at meditation have to take that approach.
I'm talking with Dr. Luke Hansen. He is a pain psychologist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, and he helps patients use relaxation techniques like meditation in conjunction with their medical treatments. We'll talk more about meditation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about meditation. We are focusing on different meditation techniques and how the practice can be used to help individuals. I've been talking to Dr. Luke Hansen, who's a pain psychologist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. He uses meditation and other relaxation techniques in helping patients who deal with chronic pain or who are fighting disease like cancer. We'd also like to hear from you this hour. If you meditate, when did you start? Why do you do it? How has it changed your life? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And joining us now is Charlie Day. He's the founder of the Des Moines Meditation and Mindfulness Group. He's also a retired psychologist. Hello, Charlie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've been studying meditation techniques for a very long time, for more than 45 years. How did you first get involved?
Well, I'd grew up here in Des Moines, went to the University of Iowa, went out to California to to become a therapist and psychologist. And at that time, there were a lot of Eastern gurus coming to the United States from Asia, India, Japan, etc. And so I took the advantage of one of their presentations to learn Transcendental Meditation, a program that you're going to feature later in this broadcast. And in having learned that meditation technique, I realized that it was probably the most profound relaxation technique that I had ever learned. And I had learned a lot of different types of relaxation techniques in my clinical psychology training. But thereafter, I used that particular meditation technique, which involved repetition of a mantra or phrase, whenever patients or students wanted to learn how to relax. At that time, I called it a relaxation technique because to be teaching meditation was seen as kind of new agey, as the former speaker pointed out, or something culties. But when called a relaxation technique, individuals were quite willing to learn it. Not everybody was willing to learn it, but those who did profited enormously in terms of their psychological growth and progress in psychotherapy. And I myself practice it as a relaxation technique whenever I encountered stress situations.
Describe it a little bit for us. I think a lot of us have heard of Transcendental Meditation, but I don't think that necessarily means that we know what it is.
Well, it particularly involved the repetition of a mantra, the mantra simply being a word that means phrase or word. And the mantra given would be a Sanskrit sound to be repeated, two or three or four syllables. One would sit comfortably relaxed, eyes closed, and simply repeat that mantra mentally. And whenever one's mind would wander, which it would do often, to thoughts or sensations in the body or noises, other kinds of distractions, one would let go of wherever the mind wandered to and return to repeating that phrase. So it was just a process of sitting for 20 minutes. At that point, it was suggested twice a day, still is really, and observing, repeating, mentally repeating the mantra and returning to the mantra whenever noticing that the mind had wandered away. Today, in the 60s, I worked in India and Thailand and had the opportunity to participate in retreats with Buddhist scholars, teachers, and monks, and realized that Buddha had evolved a philosophy of living that was very effective in terms of implementing psychological growth. And so I began using a Buddhist technique, which involves focusing on the breath as opposed to mentally repeating a mantra. In other words, one simply sits in a relaxed position, closes the eyes, and focuses the attention on the sensations of breathing. Those sensations might be experienced at the tip of the nose, on the upper lip, or in the rising and falling of the chest or abdomen. But the same instruction implied, focus on the repetition of noticing the breath, and whenever one became aware that the mind had spontaneously drifted to another object, such as a sound, a sensation in the body, or more often just thoughts, one would then let go of those thoughts and return the attention to the breath.
And this practice is referred to by many as practicing mindfulness, although in some ways it sounds like you're closing off the rest of the world.
In a sense, you're not closing off, and mindfulness is a good term. I often describe sitting meditation as a practice of sustained mindfulness because you're asked to be mindful of the breath or mindfulness of the mantra that you're repeating, or it could be mindful of a spot on a wall that you're focusing your attention on. So mindfulness, you are practicing to be mindful of what is happening in the present, or be mindful of the task you have given yourself. You're not shutting out the world. You're aware of the distractions, but you're learning a process of letting go of those distractions. And that, in effect, is training the mind to be more clear, to have more clarity in terms of focusing. So students' grades improve, not through some magical means, but because they've learned to actually focus their attention on the task they they set themselves, and they become aware of the distractions, have learned to let go of them, and to return their attention to what they're studying. So whether it's a craft you're performing, whether you're authoring a book, whether you're studying for a test, clarity of thinking is improved through the practice of meditation or another mindfulness practice.
It sounds like you're saying that the techniques that you learn when you practice meditation or some kind of mindfulness are useful to you in other parts of your life. How else does this carry through throughout the day? If you spend 20 minutes in the morning in one of these practices, how does that affect the rest of your day?
Well, I think as your speaker pointed out so well, it is at its base a relaxation response. So if you practice meditating or relaxing for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, now teachers suggest doing it for a minute or two a day if that's all you have, perhaps several times a day. But that benefits that essentially allows the body for that period of time to relax and allows the mind to relax by not focusing on thinking or worrying or regretting or planning or analyzing. You're actually training the mind to relax, and the body is, of course, relaxing by simply sitting in a comfortable position. So that relaxation carries over into the periods of time that follow in the rest of the day and begins to accumulate.
A lot of the benefits that you're describing are benefits that many people would ascribe to exercising every day or yoga, which is another way that a lot of people practice mindfulness. What do you think the benefit is of learning to be able to sit still and practice this kind of awareness?
Well, the benefit is, say, one develops a capacity to be more relaxed in all kinds of situations, and it's particularly valuable in situations. Well, for example, I'll just say that in the practice over the years, I have increasingly learned to recognize and let go of negative emotions. I might view irritation begin to arise, sadness, frustration, confusion, boredom. Doesn't matter what the negative emotion. When it begins to arise, I'm quite aware of it, and I can either focus on it, which will only increase the intensity of the negativity, or I can simply let it go and tune into my present surroundings again to be aware of what's happening around me. So, in effect, I rarely get mad anymore, and at most I get slightly irritated at things or slightly frustrated, but I've learned not to indulge it so that I create less suffering for myself, and in effect that creates a happier environment generally, and my relationships have typically improved. And I'm just reporting those personal benefits. Those are reported also by other meditators and by the research. We have an enormous amount of research now that demonstrates the benefits of meditation physically and psychologically. And one of the things I do is lead a meditation group at the women's prison, the Iowa State Iowa Correctional Institute for Women in Mitchellville, Iowa, every week. And those women give me the best feedback of anyone for the benefits. They report spending less time in the hole, not getting into trouble with other inmates or with the officers. They're quite aware of all the stresses around them, but they've learned not to react to them, to let them go. And so, therefore, they're reporting getting better opportunities, better living accommodations, better job positions that they're requesting.
I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening who think, well, this sounds wonderful, but I just don't think I could do it. I don't think I could sit and find the ability to quiet my mind. What do you say to people who don't think they're going to be able to accomplish this?
And despite what I say to them, they continue to say what you just said. The reality is that most people do have that kind of reaction because they have in their mind some idea that meditating means quieting the mind, means emptying the mind of thought or anxiety, when in fact, as your former speaker pointed out, there is a lot of mind chatter that goes on. And what you're learning to let go is not to end that chatter, but to not pay attention to it, to not indulge it. So you let go of all the thoughts that arise. Thoughts may be related to problem. Thoughts may be only related to past memories or to future worries and concerns. But when those arise during the period of meditation, if you're following the instructions, you just notice that they're there, you let go of them, and you return the attention to the breath or the repetition of a phrase.
Charlie Day, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Charlie Day is the founder of the Des Moines Meditation and Mindfulness Group. We're talking today about meditation. With me still in the studio is Dr. Luke Hansen. He's a pain psychologist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. And we're going to continue our conversations with different practitioners of meditation around the state of Iowa. I want to take a call first. John is on the line from Fairfield. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, and you just want to talk about how simple it is to work meditation into your daily life.
The simplicity I'm talking about comes from the technique of transcendental meditation. As your last speaker said, that he had learned that. It is completely simple and effortless, and that's what gives it its value. And, of course, that same simplicity and effortlessness has been talked about by your guests. But in transcendental meditation, we actually transcend thought entirely to a point where we no longer have to banish extraneous thoughts and come back to the thought or the mantra. But in the state of transcending, it's beyond thought. That's what transcendental means. But it's not that the mind goes blank. The mind remains completely awake and alert, but there's no thought in it. It's the state of a consciousness without an object of thought. And in that state, the mind imbibes all of the great power, intelligence, and harmony and love that creates and manifests itself in the world. And so you become in tune with actually the source of existence. And that is what gives the ability to perform action in more freedom and with less stress during the day.
Well, John, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experiences with transcendental meditation. I want to turn now to Lawrence Iyer. He's a social studies teacher and tennis coach at the Maharishi School in Fairfield, where meditation is a daily practice. Hello, Lawrence.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Happy to be here.
And at the school, the day begins with transcendental meditation?
That's right. Our students begin before their morning academic classes with a group meditation. And they, in fact, have all their athletic and academic and artistic activities of the day sandwiched in between two group periods of meditation. So transcendental meditation twice a day.
And how do you lead the students in this kind of meditation?
Well, everyone meets before the academic classes, and we actually do yoga. And we sit, as a group and just transcend. As the previous speaker just mentioned, it's incredibly easy. Fourth grade children can easily learn the transcendental meditation technique and get its benefits just as readily as a tenured professor at a university.
And you do this in a group setting, and I understand many people meditate in a group setting. And I'm wondering, what are the benefits of meditating with others?
It's certainly valuable, if you're by yourself as well. You'll get the benefit of deep, restful alertness whether you're in a group or alone. But there is an amplification of the value that's experienced and is measurable when people are meditating in groups. People who've driven through Fairfield have seen the golden domes, which stand out on the skyline here, you might say. And it's true that when there are hundreds of people who meditate together, there's an amplification of that good effect.
When you mentioned that fourth grade students can
yes.
learn how to meditate, is there a little bit of a difficulty with getting littler kids to sit still and focus?
Actually, no. When there's these are the kind of kids who'd rather be watching cartoons or playing video games. If it were difficult at all, they'd certainly be fidgeting. What I notice with the little kids that I've taught, and I've taught tennis to, is that they are very calm when they're meditating, and then all the energy bursts forth at the end, and they're ready to go play, they're ready to do their studies, they're ready to hit tennis balls, whatever the day has for them, they have lots of energy for. It's a time of deep, restful alertness. It's very refreshing, whether you're young or old.
How do you think this benefits students scholastically?
Well, it's fair to say we have an open admissions policy at Maharishi School, and nonetheless, our students have scored in the highest percentiles on standardized tests for years. What I'd have to say as a career educator is that the increased wakefulness that they enjoy during their period of transcendental meditation before class each day has a carryover effect that allows them to be more alert, to absorb more of what the teachers are giving them as far as knowledge, and to awaken their creativity to solve problems a lot more quickly with less friction inside. They work well in groups, so there's harmony interpersonally, but there's intrapersonal harmony. There's a quiet peacefulness within the physiology that often isn't found among high school physiologies, for example, that's quite clear in the composure of our students as they're in class and also on the tennis court.
I'm talking with Lawrence Iyer. He's a social studies teacher and tennis coach at the Maharishi School in Fairfield, where meditation is a daily practice. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk to Mina Mohammadi. She's a senior at the school. We'll talk to her about the practice and how she has used it throughout her academic career. We're talking about meditation today on Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and you're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Today we're talking about meditation. We've been talking with different meditation practitioners from around the state about how it's done and some of the many benefits of meditation. And just before the break, I was talking to Lawrence Iyer, who's a social studies teacher and tennis coach at the Maharishi School in Fairfield, where meditation is a daily practice. And now joining us is Mina Mohammadi. She's a senior at the school. Hello, Mina.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Have you been at the Maharishi School for your entire education?
I have. I started in elementary school.
And so you didn't go to another school, and you probably don't have something to compare this to, but tell me a little bit about how focusing on transcendental meditation before you start your studies in the day, how do you think that affects your day?
I think it definitely brings a level of quietness but awareness to my day. It makes it much easier to get through all my activities. I am on the tennis team. I'm the captain of the tennis team. And so academics are very important to me, but so are sports and my volunteer work and all of my activities. And it's very difficult to balance that without some sort of silence in my day, and meditation brings that.
How do you think it affects your learning techniques, how you study?
I think that it makes it much easier for me. What I've noticed is that in taking tests, it's been scientifically tested that when there's a lot of stress, it's actually difficult to recall information. And when I'm taking tests, whether it's standardized or just in class, it's so much easier for me to just relax and just recall everything that I know and use that. And it definitely helps me in being successful.
Sometimes if you're in a very stressful situation, do you just take a moment and try to center yourself?
I do, yes.
Do you use meditation techniques outside of school?
I do. Actually, this summer, I took two courses at Boston University as part of an accelerated college program for high school students. And I was surrounded by a lot of really bright, motivated students. And what I noticed is that everyone was very stressed out. It was like a six-month course in 6 weeks. But I really enjoyed myself. I love the classes, and I took my own time to meditate, and that helped to center me and bring me to a balance where I could just enjoy my life and learn as much as I could.
This meditation has been built in as part of your school day for a long time. Is this something on a Saturday morning? Do you get up and spend some time meditating?
I do. I like to meditate on the weekends because I also have a lot going on then. And if I have a tennis tournament on Saturday, then it's definitely beforehand I sit down and I meditate because it helps to ground me so that when I'm on the court, I don't feel any anxiety. I just play my best.
I think I probably just already got the answer to this question, but is this something that you plan on continuing after you graduate?
It is, yes.
And what are your plans after graduation?
I'm actually going to Grinnell College. I'm planning on double majoring in biochemistry and economics and going pre-medical.
All right. Well, best of luck to you, Mina.
Thank you.
Mina Mohammadi is a senior at the Maharishi School in Fairfield, where we've been talking about how meditation is a part of the school day there. You're welcome to join our conversation today. If you meditate, we'd love to hear why and how it affects your life. We got this email from Jerry in Cedar Rapids. He says, I have brain cancer and have significant pain in my extremities much of the time. I now cherish every day. I spent a life and career of constantly focusing on doing something for the future. Meditation helps me to realize that we truly live only now in the present. A focus on the present moment and removing the distraction of thoughts about past and future helps relieve stress and pain. He also mentions that he's found books by Jon Kabat-Zinn and Eckhart Tolle to be very helpful. Meditation or mindfulness has given me such a wonderful perspective. Jerry, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And Lillian is on the line now from Fairfield. Hi, Lillian.
Good morning, Charity. I really enjoy your interviews. You are something else.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
You sound like a meditator.
So, and you are a meditator.
Yes, I have been doing it for about 40-some-odd years. I had heard about the retardation of the aging process, and I'm a very healthy, vibrant, vital 90 years old. And it's such a blessing, and it's interesting because you said you didn't know if you could sit still and you might be, you know, a little edgy. When I started in Berkeley, California, my son was the one who interested me, and I said, I don't need it, I support civil rights and civil liberties, and I'm against the Vietnam War. I'm doing all these life-supporting things. And then I started it, and oh, boy, am I glad I did. And my first husband had multiple sclerosis, and I had read in the Scientific American that in an article called Altered States of Consciousness, that when people did transcendental meditation, chronic diseases were alleviated. He started with me. He is 92 years old today and really doing well. I mean, and he also was very negative and had a lot of road rage. And boy, he calmed down and was a wonderful, wonderful, well-adjusted person.
So this is something that has really transformed your life, and it sounds like it's also transformed your life paths. And so you are living in Fairfield, Iowa.
If I clone myself, and I could find out how I would be if I didn't meditate, there might be a big difference. But another thing, I used to go to the prisons. One of your callers mentioned that he went to the prisons. I used to go in San Quentin to meditate with the prisoners there. And this was an awesome experience. One prisoner I knew was a double murderer, and I sat next to people who had committed horrendous crimes. And these people I trusted more, to be with them, I trusted more than other people. This one guy, Pat, was eventually released because he meditated. He was very calm. He was very life-supporting. And he was a wonderful man and did a lot of good in the world after he left prison. So it's and one thing I want to mention to you, which I consider extremely vital, you know David Lynch, the famous film director?
Yes.
Well, David Lynch has established the David Lynch Foundation, and my son and a lot of people, and my daughter-in-law and a lot of people work very, very hard for this foundation, and they have introduced TM to disadvantaged at-risk kids all over the world, and the results are phenomenal. As your callers mentioned, grades, you know, have improved. Violence in the schools has gone way down. They're doing this in the school system in San Francisco, Los Angeles, a lot of different places. So to me, I feel that this is the best thing for the world. It can relieve the stresses individually and collectively. And to me, it's the way to bring peace to everybody and to the world.
Well, Lillian, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience with us today. And I want to bring now Rachel Griffiths into the conversation. She's a student at the Lamrim Kadampa Buddhist Center in Davenport and Iowa City. Hello, Rachel.
Hi. Thanks for covering this topic.
And this is a Buddhist group. We talked earlier with Charlie Day about the Buddhism aspect of meditation. You did not approach this, though, as a Buddhist. What brought you to the center?
Well, I initially started meditating or considered meditating about 2.5 years ago. It's what you're hearing. I was stressed. I'd lay down to go to sleep. My mind would be racing. I was doing all the right things in my life, but not feeling happy, not feeling satisfied. And I thought, I need to try something. So I just went to the 6-week meditation class that was offered in the Quad Cities.
And how did that change you? I mean, obviously, a few years later, you're still here, you're still at it. But how did it hit you? I guess, what kind of an experience did you have right at first?
Well, initially, I thought, I have control over my mind. I don't need to work on my mind. But very quickly, I realized it was hard to focus on my breath. My thoughts were scattered to bills and what was going to be for dinner and the incident at the office yesterday. And I realized, wow, I really don't have control over my mind. And as I practiced breathing meditation, as I just persevered, I started to see my being able to control my mind. When it would spin off on a topic, I could bring it back and focus it.
And how has that changed your life?
Oh, it's changed it. Just ask my kids. I'm patient. I'm calmer. I'm happier. I don't feel a lot of fear or despair or hopelessness. Like nothing's changed physically in my life. Same home, same job, same family. But my attitude, my mental state of mind has completely transformed. And it's almost unbelievable.
I want to bring Dr. Hansen back into the conversation here. When I hear Rachel's story, I think, and you know, from our callers, obviously for some people, practicing meditation can be a really transformative experience. For a lot of your patients, it probably doesn't change things as dramatically. Is that, would you say that's a good assessment, or do you see this amazing transformation?
I would say, well, it is, you know, there's certainly a wide range of response. I think, you know, I work with a lot of chronic pain patients. So I have some who insist that it really seems to take the edge off their pain and makes a big difference. Does it totally eliminate pain? Not for anyone that I've encountered yet. But, but even for those that don't report a significant reduction in pain, they often report less suffering or feeling a better quality of life. Just being able to kind of float with things a little bit better. You know, when we experience anxiety or pain on a certain level, it's as though it's triggering our fight or flight response. And we want to get rid of it or somehow fight it off. And that's usually responding to our anxiety with more anxiety. And so using meditation can help individuals learn to accept, learn to float with things rather than indulge it, as a earlier caller mentioned.
Heather sent us this email. She says, one of the best classes I took at the University of Iowa during my college years was relaxation techniques. I've been struggling with migraines since I was 9 years old, missed nearly half of my high school days with either migraines or the side effects of medication. This class was my search for something to get me off constant medication. While it's not perfect, and I use it in conjunction with medication, I very soon after was able to get off daily beta blockers and just use over-the-counter pain medication to alleviate the pain. Amazing what happened when I started listening to my body and telling it what I wanted it to do. So there is someone who did have really an amazing transformation medically.
Yeah, right. You know, it can have that short-term effect or the cumulative effect if done over time. I read a study recently. The anesthesiologists in various hospitals across the country are using it in surgery, not in place of anesthesia. I'm not sure I'd want to sign up for that quite yet. But when using it, they're finding that they can use much less anesthesia, which is safer and improves recovery times. So there's an example of how it can work short-term with pain management, but also cumulatively when we do this daily, it has that ability to calm our nervous system.
Rachel, you continue to study meditation and take classes at the Lam Rim Kadampa Buddhist Center. What's the difference now between what you're doing and what you're learning about meditation now than you learned right at the start?
Well, I think through studying the texts under the teacher, I'm learning that happiness really is a state of mind. You hear those phrases, mind over matter. It's true. We all know people who are who really have physical problems and maybe a lot of pain, but they're happy and they aren't suffering. And we also know people who have perfect bodies, perfect health, and they're still miserable and suffering. So I'm learning, wow, it's a state of mind. If I practice my meditation, if I study, I will be able to have a happy, peaceful life no matter what's happening outside.
So you feel like you have farther to go?
Oh, of course. Of course. The day hopefully will come when meditation can override everything in the external, you know, any difficult situation or disaster. And I'm not quite there, but I'm going to get there.
Tim is on the line now from Iowa City. And Tim, you use meditation to help mentally ill patients.
Yes, I do. I've been a practitioner myself in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition for about 40 years. And I have created a program, a meditation group in a mental health setting, and teach it in personal psychotherapy. And I just wanted to chime in with Dr. Hansen's comments that the change can be very dramatic, and it's often gradual at first, and if people stick with it, that it can become much, much deeper over time, and it's in direct proportion to how many hours they're putting in over time.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for calling, and we're almost out of time, Dr. Hansen, but meditation obviously is a very old practice. We are drawing on some very old ideas and some very old expertise to bring it into modern medicine. We're learning a lot through modern research about what really can be accomplished through this practice. What do you think the future looks like for the use of meditation in medicine?
Well, I think that I'm optimistic that it will be used more and more. I think even since I have been in the field of psychology, this entire branch of what we refer to as health psychology has taken off even more and more. The position that I'm at in Mercy is a new position that the hospital had the awareness that, hey, these types of approaches are very important, and that outcomes are better, whether it be activity level, medication reduction, quality of life. People report better outcomes typically when they address the entire person rather than just focusing on that physical ailment.
Well, and we talked about using it with cancer patients, using it with patients with chronic pain. Also, many people are using meditation techniques with people who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. We talked just a moment ago with Tim about using it with patients in mental illnesses. Do you have other doctors coming to you saying, I would like to be able to integrate this into what I'm doing with my patients and asking you for assistance?
I have certainly had these types of conversations with the anesthesiologists that I work with. It would be great to have more of that.
Dr. Hansen, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Dr. Luke Hansen at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. Rachel Griffiths, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Rachel Griffiths is a student at Lamrim Kadampa Buddhist Center in Iowa City and Davenport. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan with technical support from John Pemble. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.